Okay, good morning, everyone. We are in a different quarter now, and this is very, very different for me. This is very different than what I'm used to. For the last 5 years, we've been going through the entire Bible chronologically, so we're very heavily in Scripture in the Bible class. This one's a little different because the elders want us to do a spiritual growth evaluation as a congregation. So we have been talking a lot about evaluating where we're really at as a congregation and where we want to go, and we're going to continue to get into that this morning. We do know that we are short on books, on workbooks, so if you don't have one, just be patient. We've ordered more. They're just taking a while to get right now, but they are coming. Also, this class is different because we're taking everybody's comments via microphone. So first of all, I do have one microphone runner this morning. Is there anybody who would like to volunteer to do the second microphone runner? All right, Will, very good. Let's see. You just turn that on. There we go. Okay. Some logistics about that. I understand if you don't really like the microphones. I get it. Maybe it's awkward or something. It helps other people. So just view it as a Christian thing, right? Like, I don't like doing this, but I'm doing it because I care about other people. Because it helps everybody in the auditorium hear your comment, and it helps the people at home who are live streaming in hear your comment. And I get it. You know, we're humble or modest. We might be like, I don't want anybody to hear my comment, really. But you really do. Your comments are valuable, and we care what you have to say, and the shepherds are willing even to make changes to the congregation based on your input and your comments. So that's one logistic. The second logistic is, in order for this to really work well with the two microphone system, you must A, raise your hand high so that they can see it. If you're like me, sometimes I do like the little, you know, my hand's on the pew, and that's not going to work. The people with the microphone have to be able to see your hands. Secondly, don't wait until the person before you is finished making their comment before you raise your hand. Even if they're still talking, raise your hand. Because the ideal thing is, as soon as that person is done with their comment, the microphone is to you and you're ready to go. But if we have to have that awkward thing like, okay, well, now we need to wait 20 seconds for the microphone to come down to you, just raise your hand immediately when you have a comment, and you'll be able to do that, because this is a heavily class commenting sort of thing, which, you know, again, is quite different from my teaching style typically. So this is going to be interesting, and this is my first time trying this. We also have an iPad this morning that I'm going to be writing on, so hopefully my handwriting will be legible, and we're going to see how this works. So everything is changing. All right, let's go to God in prayer, because I need it. Father in heaven, we praise your name. We thank you so much for this amazing opportunity to study your word and to gather strength from the amazing account of David and Goliath, and help us to have the courage to face the facts of the things we need to work on as a congregation, and to know that you'll be with us as we make these changes and we seek to do all things for your glory. Bless us in our study this morning. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, So far in this class, we've talked about evaluating the things that we need to change as a congregation. And we talked about how every person plays a role. Everybody can make a difference as we work together on these changes. And the good news is we're actually doing pretty well here at PSD. When we talked about all the things that we're doing well, there were a whole lot of really positive comments. There are some congregations, sadly, that are really floundering. And if they were to go through that self-evaluation, it would be, you know, a lot more painful. But the truth is, when I compiled a list of all the things we said we needed to work on and change, there were about 20 things on that list. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds a little daunting to me, especially as a preacher, because I know I play a pretty important role in trying to equip you all to make these changes. You know, if we were to make these 20 changes over the coming years, it'd be an amazing thing. But right now, it feels like there are some obstacles in our way to making these changes. And so what I want to do for the next two classes, this morning and Wednesday, is to talk together candidly and honestly about the obstacles in the way of change. But before we do that, I want us to talk about the account of David and Goliath, because I want to start on a tone of hopefulness that the Lord will actually help us conquer these obstacles, no matter how formidable or overwhelming they seem. So we'll begin with a discussion of the story in 1 Samuel 17. And the first question comes from question number one, really page 25 from the workbook. What facts did David have to face when he arrived on the scene, essentially, for the first time? What was the situation? What was going on? Who wants to lead us off? Okay, Debbie?
Well, the first thing is that he faced jeering by his brothers.
Okay.
They were like, what are you doing here? Why aren't you home taking care of the sheep?
All right, yeah.
Really just
yeah, so he had no support from his brothers at all, which, you know, it's kind of hard to face obstacles when your own family kind of isn't supporting you. How's that going? Can you guys see that okay? I might need to make it a little bigger. All right, Jay.
He was just physically smaller than everyone else, not even including Goliath.
Okay, good. So, all right. You guys are answering my third question, I think. What did David have working against him? So that's good. I'm going to save that, though, both of those technically. Okay, Jeff Scott.
He was not even part of the army. I mean, he was just, you know, so he was just a guest. He was just a visitor there. And so no one would have said, David, why didn't you volunteer for this? That wasn't his job. He wasn't there to fight, but he did anyway.
Okay, well, forget my question three. We'll just start. We'll do question three right now. We'll combine it, all right? So he's not a soldier. All right, yeah, Terry?
So one of the things that, one fact he had to face when he arrived there was the fact that Saul, the king of God's people, was afraid and lacked any faith. And likewise, the men that were under Saul's leadership, they were also afraid and they lacked faith.
Great, yeah. Yeah, so everybody's terrified and scared when he gets there, which, you know, that's really hard. I mean, you get somewhere and there's a group of thousands of men potentially, and they're all terrified, and you're supposed to stand up and against that. So yeah, that's a pretty terrifying situation.
Just piggybacking on that one, remember that Saul was actually pretty impressive in stature himself, nothing compared to Goliath, but it's in relation to the other Israelites. He was described when he was anointed as head and shoulders above the rest. So if the largest, most imposing, most intimidating person in your camp, who also happens to be the king, is terrified of this giant, David's so much smaller than even Saul, much less than Goliath. So
yeah.
even just comparing to the person who would have been the most reasonable champion, he was tiny.
Absolutely, yeah. Goliath is huge. He's bigger than their king, and the king's pretty. King Saul's pretty big. Matt.
So it's a little bit piggybacking on the king and the men being scared, but I was going to say the status quo. Anything that's entrenched or has been, once you start doing something or not doing something for a long time, it's really hard to change or to stick out. So that
okay.
Status quo is very more powerful than we like to admit.
Right. Yeah, the status quo kind of fighting against the cultural tide of fear there. Yeah.
Just the fact that, you know, there is somebody in their campsite that he has to fight. That's one of the facts that's there. Like, there's somebody there who is trying to hurt them.
Yeah, great. Man, you guys are killing it this morning with the microphone flow. I like it. All right, who's next, Stuart?
So what I see was when he arrived at the camp, it's more of everybody was preoccupied with the obstacle of Goliath when they should be looking at themselves as their own inadequacies that were keeping them down from facing Goliath in God's work.
Okay, good. Yeah. So no one facing their own inadequacies. If I can fit that, oh boy, it's like I'm back in school. All right, Carol.
40 days of day and night humiliation and shame is a big psychological effect.
All right, great. Yeah, 40 days of humiliation. All right, Terry. Oh, sorry, Mary, and then Terry.
He's been out with his sheep, and he has a very close relationship with God, and he hears him defied and curse. And that would just be enraging. And
yes, so God is being cursed, and yeah, that'd be just infuriating. Let me say this too. If you're watching in online, I meant to say you can text your comments to that phone number. That's my phone that I'll get here and try to multitask with that. Terry?
David also had to face the fact that the Philistines also lack faith. They were standing high on the ridge on the opposite side, the same as the Israelites, and they didn't have enough faith in their gods to move down to the valley to attack. Therefore, okay, the Israelites were behaving as the Philistines.
Okay. Very good. All right. We'll probably do... Okay, I think that's it for this, and we need to move on here. Acting the same. All right. So... secondly, what did David have working against him? Okay, that was my second question. So we had some already, jeering brothers. His size difference. He's not a soldier. He's not a warrior. He's a shepherd. Anything else that we might have missed from that list of things that are working against him? Obviously, a scared king, scared army, all that stuff. Yeah, Chloe.
He doesn't even have strength to wear the armor.
Okay, yeah, so the armor doesn't even really fit him very well. It was Saul's armor, basically, and so it's clanking around. So we'll just put no armor. All right, yeah. Jay?
Kind of going along with that, he doesn't have any experience in any way. He doesn't have any combat experience, nothing. He has his staff and his little slingshot thing going on. That's about it.
Yeah, no real live combat experience. Now he's fought some animals, and we'll talk about that in a second. But a human being, especially not that size. Randy?
Yes. And because of those things, he has no reason to have any confidence.
Okay. Yeah, no reason for confidence in terms of a physical, fight hand-to-hand with a person, so... Okay, very good. I think we got a pretty good case there of things going against him. And by the way, I'm repeating slides just to give us, more space if we need. So here's another question. How was David able to escape the fear and the lack of courage that Saul and all of the army of the Israelites had? What were some things that allowed him to overcome? Debbie, and then Joy's got a hand after Terry.
Well, for one thing, he is new on the scene. He hasn't been there entrenched in that fear and immobility for 40 days.
Okay.
He was just out in the field with his sheep, protecting them and being close to God. He had had all that time to spend with God. So when he got there and heard that jeering and that taunting and making fun of God, cursing God, that did not settle well. That just hit him, and he had a fresh perspective.
Okay, good, good. I like that. Okay, Joy?
He had learned to trust in God to help him protect the sheep, even to killing wild animals.
Okay.
Without weapons. And so he had a tremendous faith in God and courage that God would help him.
Yeah, absolutely. God helped him before. He delivered a lion into his hands, delivered a bear in his hands. I love that description. He grabbed the lion by his beard. And I just imagine just grabbing him by his beard and just punch him in the face or something. I'm not really sure how that worked, but man, he's got faith that God can handle anything now after that. Okay, Terry?
David didn't have anything working against him. What Goliath and Saul were able to do very successfully, it was to make this fight about the individuals. Mm-hmm. And David, it was never about David. It was always about God. That's the reason David had no disadvantage.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, really good. Whoops. Just zoomed in. Trying to figure out how to summarize that. All right. Let's see. Yes, Will.
Yeah, this was mentioned earlier, but the Philistines were also trying to put God and his people to shame. So David was filled with this zeal because God and his purpose and his people were being reproached, being put to shame.
Okay, yeah, so zeal for the Lord, really. You know, his he's just on fire for God. And when he heard God is being insulted and mocked, yeah, really good.
We're here.
Yeah, we got to remember that God described David as a man after his own heart. So David wasn't in any kind of comparison mode when he looked at Goliath. He wasn't seeing Goliath. He didn't see him like you and I might see him. Mm. He saw him like God saw him, someone blaspheming the living God. So he's a man after his own heart. And the other thing I might want to add is God in our lives isn't ever going to bring us into something he hasn't prepared us for. Mm. He's in the preparation. He's in the process of preparation. And so he prepared David with the bear and the lion, and he was a man after his own heart, and that's how he was able to get around the fear and lack of courage the others had.
Yeah, definitely. It is so cool how 1 Samuel 16:7, it says God does not look at appearance, right? He looks at the heart. And David looks at Goliath like God looks at people. He said, I don't care what Goliath looks like. I just know he's a pagan in his heart, and he serves false gods, and he's blaspheming the one true God. So it's really cool how to see that back-to-back comparison. Matt?
I'm going to slightly quibble with your question just a little bit.
Nope, no problem.
And say, I don't think he probably escaped fear.
Okay.
I'm sure on a human, physical, visceral level, he was probably terrified.
Okay,
you know,
good.
It's been said the courage is not the path of fear. But he was able to accept it or push through it or whatever. But we can get tricked into thinking we should have no fear.
Good.
And that's not going to be the case.
Good. I like that distinction. Yeah, it doesn't mean, you know, we're not going to be afraid at all. And yeah, as a human being, I mean, I think even Jesus was afraid of the cross. That's why he's on his knees crying in the garden the night before, right? But he faced that fear through his faith. John?
I was thinking about David would have been aware of stories like when the Israelites first came into Canaan. And they had to deal with giants.
Okay, good.
And so he would have pulled from that situation and used that as part of his faith.
Absolutely. He knew the scripture. He knew history of how God had delivered, you know, the Israelites in the past. So yeah.
Just piggybacking off what Matt said, you know, he was able to face his fear because of the past history with the relationship he had with God, because he states that in the text, mm-hmm. you know, just as God delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear, he will deliver me from this Philistine. Mm-hmm. So it's not a blind faith that he has at all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very informed faith based on their history. Kent back here, you see him, John? You got a hand back there? There you go. I'll also throw this in too. He said this is actually bringing reproach upon Israel. It is bringing reproach on God, but also on the nation. It's making Israel look weak. It's making God look weak. And so he had this clarity of purpose that this is all about God and his glory and his purpose. That's why I appreciate our spiritual growth cycle, that in the center of the spiritual growth cycle, it says grow to God's glory. This is all about God's honor. And when we don't serve God right, then not only does PSD look bad, but Jesus looks bad because we're supposed to be representing him. Yes, sir, Kent.
We can see that David went into battle with the armor and the weaponry that he was comfortable with.
Okay.
You know, Saul tried to give him, you know, you need this mighty armor to protect you. But, you know, David understood, this is what I'm comfortable with. I have the Lord on my side.
Yeah, great. So David didn't try to be someone else. He said, look, I'm, you know, this armor doesn't really fit me. I'm much better with a sling. And slings are no joke, by the way. Those stones are the size of tennis balls, and people who are proficient with those ancient slings can sling them between 100 and 150 miles an hour. So you get hit with a baseball 90 mile an hour in the head, that's going to hurt. But, you know, you get up to 130 and it's a rock, it's not a baseball. It's even harder than a baseball. That's pretty serious business. Okay, very good. Appreciate it. Did I miss anybody? Did anybody have a mic that didn't get to? Yeah, Will?
I know I'm the one with the mic,
yes,
but I
perfect.
Just wanted to mention the fact that from a physical perspective, he did with what he could. He had a slingshot. He knew that it could be used as a weapon, even in the slightest bit. So even though God was the majority of helping him defeat Goliath, he also knew that he had things that he brought.
Okay, yeah. So he did come prepared.
So
you know, it's not like he showed up with nothing.
I I'd like to call it the improv perspective.
All right, very good. So let me just ask, and this is just a way to get out whatever is there within you still about the story that we haven't talked about, that you just think, man, this is just my favorite part, or this is just the most faith-building part of this story. It'll just kind of get out any remaining comments on this story before we move into the practical stuff for our congregation. Jeff?
Yeah, the part that impacted me most was thinking about how I would have been if I was there. I think the author kind of leads you down that path of you know, we would all have been good soldiers in Saul's army, standing by watching, cheering David on, but not doing it ourselves. And you know, you just apply that to this whole book of thinking about yourself. Where would you have been on that day? Would you have been David, or would you have been one of the other experienced soldiers standing there saying, boy, I sure wish somebody would go take care of this Goliath guy, but it's not going to be me?
Yeah, I love, and the Nehemiah in the workbook points that out, how Saul just says to David, you know, go and may the Lord be with you, you know. And sometimes we're that person, like, we don't actually want to do it, we don't want to do the hard thing, we want to send somebody else and say, you know, I'll pray for you, you know, good luck. So yeah, that's really practical. All right, Gail's got one.
I was also going to say that God does this too. He doesn't always pick the best person in our minds for the job. Like, we would have considered a soldier someone who had been trained for many years, and we think we have to be that kind of soldier for God to use us. But we can take somebody with a talent of a shepherd, and still God can use them for that.
He often chooses a very unexpected vessel or instrument, you know, to accomplish his purposes. Yeah, very good. All right, a couple hands over here.
So at work, our boss over the school, Christian school, says that God doesn't always call the qualified, he qualifies the called. So I think in this case, you know, David was called to do this, and I hope I'm saying that right, because I've messed it up
says
it before. But
that's a good, yeah, that's
but
a good
he qualifies those who are called. So you might not think of David as the ideal, you know, candidate based on size and such. But I think that also for me is one of the things that's a faith building part, is just his stature compared to Goliath. I've stood next to a 7'2" man who thankfully was very kind, but you know, being probably about the size of a 12-year-old boy myself, it's a huge difference. And just
sure.
to see God use him in that way, he can use any of us in whatever way that he chooses.
Yeah, that really good. Yeah, I mean, he qualifies the call. You know, Paul says, like, our adequacy is from the Lord. You know, we're completely inadequate in and of ourselves, but the Lord makes us adequate. He sharpens our hands and prepares us for battle. Yeah, Will.
The thing that I really just that when he says when David Goliath, that I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, you've defied. And you know, when we remember that every person who's unkind or who's, you know, comes up to us with jeering or mocking or cursing or whatever, we just remember that you're defying the living God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Satan is the enemy, like we've talked about. It's not, you're not our enemies, this is Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And like David just said, Satan, get behind me. I'm coming after you. And I love that zeal. I just love that focus.
Yeah, really good. So David knew the real enemy, you know, was Satan. And even when Goliath curses David, it says he cursed David by his gods, right? So this is a gods versus the one true God story, not just David versus Goliath. Megan?
Hi, first of all. Hey. I really like, my favorite part was when Saul calls for him, and then David says, oh, I can do this, like, I've got this, right? And Saul's like, absolutely not, absolutely not. Like, you're not qualified for this, definitely not. And then he proceeds to, like, convince him with all of the reasons why he can do it with God's help. So I just really like that part.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, he overcomes Saul's doubt in his ability, which again, it's easy to read about. That's really hard to do in practice. when somebody doubts your ability. Okay, Larry, and then this will be the last one, and we'll move on.
Yeah, so what you got going on here with God's people on one mountain and the pagans on another mountain, and God's people kind of shrinking back and cowering in fear over appearances, what's really going on is that they're giving great wide berth and occasion to the enemies to blaspheme the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so in our faith, we can't act like that when we're in the world and the things that are around us, because it gives people an occasion to blaspheme God. Well, there goes Larry, but he's a Christian, but what about, he doesn't talk about God at work. He doesn't, you know. So it's just, that's something to think about in our own walk, you know.
Yeah, really good. Really good point. Our actions are so important in this world because people are looking at us as the representations of Christ. And, you know, what's one of the biggest objections you hear for why people aren't Christians? Well, the church is full of hypocrites, right? It's like maybe they got mistreated, you know, at some point in their life. And, you know, maybe some of that is fair in their experience. Maybe they really were mistreated. And it can have, you know, horribly damaging effects. Okay, well, now we're going to talk about changes in the congregation that we've talked about specifically. Let me preface this here by saying that this really is going to be mainly about brainstorming together. We're not going to be putting any official plans in place, right, until the shepherds discuss it first. But just know, already the comments that you guys have made in this class have impacted the way we do things. The shepherds actually on February 6th are planning to stop having a designated time where they send the collection plate around. We'll still be taking up the collection via Zelle. We'll have the box in the back that you can, you know, place your money in, but we won't be passing the plate around. And that was largely due to the comments in class that were made earlier. So I just want you to know, like, your comments about these things matter. The shepherds are listening. They value your input. On the other hand, as we talk through these things, it might be eye-opening to talk about obstacles to making certain changes because, you know, on the one hand, you might think, well, wow, I didn't even think about that obstacle, so maybe that change isn't that good of an idea as we thought it was. Or maybe we have to wait a while to make this change, or maybe we need to adopt a different version of this change that would make a little bit more sense. So the first one we're going to talk about is developing deeper relationships with our brethren, becoming better friends with each other. Now, what we'll do is we'll talk about obstacles, and then we'll talk about potential solutions. Okay, so let's just brainstorm a little bit here. What are some obstacles to this change? Why is this difficult to develop deeper relationships with our brethren and to become better friends with each other? Yeah, all right. Got Matt here, John.
So something that's can be really uncomfortable or hard to acknowledge, I think something I've learned is deep-seated insecurities or unhealed issues in our own lives. You know, we can intellectually go, you know, they're not going to judge us and they're loving and kind, but emotionally it can be terrifying to be vulnerable with other people. And I know for me that is something that's bigger than I used to realize.
Okay. Yeah, really good. Maybe we're kind of hiding because it's easier to hide. If our brethren get to know what's really going on with us, maybe we're afraid they'll reject us, so they won't want to be our friends. Yeah, Jeff?
Too busy.
All right. Yeah, really good. Too busy. Very. And I'm finding that one is probably an obstacle to almost all of these changes that we're talking about, is that we do have limited time schedules, and sometimes they're just really full of things. So, all right. Anybody else on potential? Yeah, Ms. Marilyn.
I think it's kind of hard to understand the different members' circumstances in their own private lives.
Okay.
That might need help or being confined or you know, just understanding each other.
Okay, yeah, good. So circumstances are different. You could probably add personality differences, okay? It can be a bit of a challenge sometimes to really understand each other when we come from such different backgrounds and perspectives and all that. So, yeah, Will?
Lack of communication skills, possibly. I guess that goes in with insecurities and emotional vulnerability, but, you know, sometimes it's hard to know what to say is, hi, how are you? I'm Carol. You know, and what comes after that, if there's that silence, that awkward silence, or that pause.
Okay, just kind of knowing what to say, awkward pauses, okay? typical things we deal with, unfortunately. Will?
So I think there's an obstacle that can be overcome, but just physical distance from each other. Jerusalem of Acts 2 through 4, you know, we have transportation now that allows us to live away from each other, but I think that can sometimes be an obstacle.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if it takes me 45 minutes to get to your house, like, and my schedule is super busy, right, then that's adding time that makes things difficult. Yeah. Anybody got a mic? John?
I just wanted to elaborate on the introverts and extroverts.
Yeah, that was a text that came in, so I
wrote
that
down.
From
Susan.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Because sometimes a lot of outgoing people, what could happen is when that introvert wants to get to know other people, sometimes the extroverts, because they're always kind of on, they just boom, bombard that, and an introvert it's like a clam. Bam, they're going to shut down and pull away.
All right.
And the next thing they know is like, okay, I don't belong there. And you have to understand that thinking in an introvert is completely different than an extrovert. They're going to take what someone says. Mm-hmm. They're going to mull it over. They're going to think about it. It's not that they're being shy or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just give them a moment. And usually... you know, when they're laughed at or things like that, it just shuts them down.
Okay.
And you know, and I've had to learn those things.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I think we can move to the solutions here and kind of put that under that, because you're talking about really adapt, right, to the other person. and don't think that they're just like you, right, in every way. Sometimes we want them to be exactly like us, and when they're not, we're like, what's wrong with this person? They should be like me, you know? If everybody was like me, the world would be amazing. It's like, no, like we need the diversity in the church. That's the part of God's wisdom, but that it takes patience, all those things in Ephesians 4, right? Patience and love and tolerance and all that, okay? All right, what are some solutions to the situation here? Well,
yeah, this goes to the idea of being too busy also with families, just to make fellowship with brethren be part of your child raising experience so that your children are part of that and they can see. So you're not too busy because you're raising your kids. Your kids are part of the fellowship.
Nice. Yeah. So make it a priority with your kids to be in fellowship with your brethren, spend time with their brethren. Really good. Yeah, Chris.
Yeah. This reminds me of a transition I reflect on that I went through when I used to teach. And I think we all have these inhibitions that we're talking about where you know what you're thinking, you know what you wish someone would understand, you know what you want to say, you see them doing things they shouldn't be doing, but we have inhibitions and an unwillingness to say it. And there are some students that I finally got so frustrated with after 3 or 4 years of teaching, then I would just start pulling students in my office, and you would say what their parent wouldn't say to them, what other teachers wouldn't say to them, what their friends wouldn't say to them, what you would tell them what you think everyone is thinking, but no one will tell them. And I didn't like seeing them in that situation. And the reason I, at least, would not say these things was because I didn't think it would matter. I didn't think they would listen. I didn't think it would have an impact. If their own parent is unable to get them to behave correctly, how can I? I'm just someone they see for one period a day. But when you put that emotional energy into telling someone right from wrong, telling them how you feel, helping them to see the truth. It does matter. And there are a lot of stories that I'm sure are around the congregation where it does matter. And I saw that happen in my students. And I'm thinking one in particular that went from one who was skipping school all the time and leaving and going to Dunkin' Donuts during class to being one of the best student leaders I ever had. And it's all because I broke that barrier myself and I faced myself on how to deal with that.
Okay, all right, I'm not sure. Yeah, not sure how to summarize that, but I appreciate it. I got a text that came through that said texts, calls, cards, right? We can reach out more, to each other that way. All right, Ryan.
And I think this kind of goes for all of these probably as well, but being honest with ourselves, when we say that we're too busy, what that really means is we have other priorities, right? We all have the same amount of time, and we do all have a requirement to keep our house in order. We have to work. We have responsibilities within our lives. We need to have our own time with God. But this is, if this is truly something that we want to see change in, then we need to make it a priority and allocate that time to it.
Yeah, that's very true. We always make time for the things that are most important. Okay, Randy?
And that's not easy for me, but I have found that if you find something you can help somebody with, the relationship will develop naturally.
Okay, good. So let's see. Find common ground. I apologize if these aren't the best summaries of what you're saying. But okay, Bonnie.
I think one of the things that the elders have done is the house to house.
Okay.
And I did not go to the first one, but then I started going. And that's how you really get to know on a smaller scale your brethren, their problems, yeah, their happiness. And you can celebrate with them or maybe help them or just get to know them better.
Very good.
And if you change around to the different house to house as they come up, you're pretty soon going to get to meet a lot of the brethren on a more personal level.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to talk about that in a second, Chloe. And this will be the last one for this one.
Persevere. So don't give up at the first sign of...
Yeah. Yeah, don't give up, right? Sometimes we're just very sensitive to rejection and like, well, I called them and they said it wasn't going to work out, so I guess I'll just never invite them again. Can't deal with the rejection. No. Keep trying. Don't be desperate like the, typical, why won't you ever hang out with me? That's probably not going to work. Don't give up. All right, very good. So how about this one, increasing attendance at H2H groups? Because like Bonnie said, these are very, very important. And I'm seeing I'm going to have to work on my pacing for this class. That is for sure. Obstacles to increasing attendance in house-to-house groups. How do we do that? Now, we have had feedback forms, submitted already to the shepherds by the people who go. But there may be people who don't go to these. And the shepherds want to hear from you about what are some obstacles keeping you from going. Yeah, Chloe?
Different work schedules. So like I work nights, so it's hard during the week. And then Sundays are just long in general.
Okay.
So like Saturday ones.
All right, very good. Okay, I know from personal experience of people in our group saying it's hard to bring kids. They're distracting, and what do you do with them? They're running around, and it's hard to keep them quiet and keep them engaged. All right, Matt's got a hand up here.
On the kids thing, my kids are older now, so I don't have that problem. And I do think it's valuable for kids to see adults have adult conversations and work through those things. It's really, really important. But it's hard to balance because there's things that, again, this is not a therapy session where we open up all our secrets, but there's some topics that we might not be comfortable talking about in front of kids that we want to talk about with our brethren. So that's a really, I don't have an answer, but that's definitely can be one obstacle.
Yeah. So discussion in front of the kids, what do I talk about? How much do I reveal? That's tough. I put vulnerability. Some people just may not want to share their struggles at all with a group. Yeah. Brenda.
I think we,
really have the problem of distance now. I don't think of it because I live pretty close, but we are pretty far flung. A lot of our members live kind of far. Okay. And I know that's a problem in other congregations in larger urban areas. There's barriers with traffic, there's barriers with time. It's just, we have to manage those better. We manage it when we, you know, like got to get to the airport or whatever. So
sure.
See that as a priority for togetherness as well.
Yeah, really good. Carrie
Ann? Sometimes the groups get really large. And so I've been in smaller groups and I've been in larger groups. And I think sometimes when they get, I don't know what the magic number is, but over a certain number, you lose the intimacy and like the real connection that you're able to make with each of the members.
Okay, good point. Okay, so let's talk about solutions then. What can we do? You know, you can be hard to change the physical distance thing. You have to move a house. All right.
Piggybacking off what Ryan said, we need to make house-to-house attendance a priority in our lives.
Okay. Yeah, good, yeah, make it a priority. Yeah, and that was one of the things when we eliminated Sunday evening services. The idea was the shepherds knew we're going to be adding an hour of the house-to-house, you know, during the week. And studies do show that you can't get people to meet four times in a week as a church. You can try, it's not going to happen. But you can get them to meet three times. And so we still have Wednesday, and then we have our Sunday morning. That's two times. Even though it's a long Sunday, the third one is the H2H. So it's very doable. We just have to make it a priority. All right? Who has a mic? Oh, yep.
I was going to say, too, as far as the kids problem, I think there's a lot of us that are still hopefully young enough that we could maybe take some of the kids into our home and set them up with, you know, Bible class type of activities or things like that where the parents can be gone for an hour and a half to have their time at a house to house. And if we had maybe three houses that would take on a few kids, we could cover that.
Okay, all right, yeah, good point. Somebody texted in, this is interesting, but do an H2H group for kids. So you could just bring the kids into a separate room and have one of the adults maybe just have a discussion with them, you know, so that's pretty good. All right, who's got a mic? Rach.
Instead of having like set days and times that you work for, sign up for the actual group and then like work around that group schedule to have your date and time for those weeks. Because like I've looked at the schedule and like none of these days work for me and I can't sign up for one. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe like, you know, if you find something that's gonna work for everyone in the group, that might help with that maybe a little
okay.
bit.
Yeah. So maybe change change the day and time potentially, you know, if that can work for other people. If you can let the host know, hey, I'm really struggling with this time, could we maybe, you know, do it a different one? And maybe that can happen. Okay. Anybody else? All right. See, we only have a minute left, so we'll probably just hang out on this one for increasing attendance in H2H groups. That was Cindy Van Lanningham that talked about the group for kids. So, you know, possibly Dwayne and I, we could add a little section on there for questions for the kids. You know, let's see, not Dairy Queen, DQs for the kids, discussion questions for the kids, and maybe that's a possibility. Anything else for potentially increasing the attendance in the H2H groups? All right, Will, back there.
I think the church has been pretty good about this too, but we can handle the proximity of us all being scattered by trying to stretch that out for those who are hosting homes to look at the different areas where and make sure that they're kind of spread out, the homes that are available for H2H.
Mm, okay. Yeah, so, you know, spread out geographical availability. Okay, so it's not, you know, leaving people out that are on the west side of town or whatever. Very good. All right. Well, I really appreciate all of your comments this morning. We were supposed to get through 10 of these, and we got through two. But like I said, this is totally new to me. And yeah, as far as trying to time this out, I'm not worried about perfection, only progress. So thanks so much for your good comments. Appreciate it. And God will conquer all of these obstacles for us. We keep our faith in Him, our courage in Him, like David did with Goliath. So appreciate it very much. We'll break until 10:45.